Hello. I've lost count of the number of times I've been told that our present-day attitudes towards homosexuality are proof of the increasing liberality of our culture. It's an argument also used by those like Richard Dawkins and Steven Pinker, who are temperamentally inclined to a progressive view of history. I've no personal reason to dispute the thesis. I mean, I can well remember how very different matters were in the past. I can well remember to my shame, the early 50s evenings in Liverpool when, together with my mates, I'd have a few drinks and go down to the old Royal Pub in the centre of town for what we called a laugh at the queers. And as I remember, the queers who congregated in the old Royal were extraordinarily tolerant of our bigotry. Some even played up to their stereotype, responded in kind to our chatter. But as far as we were concerned, they remained figures in a menagerie almost, fearfully different. But there's a danger here. In contrasting those deeply prejudiced days with contemporary metropolitan liberality, it's easy, so easy, to overlook areas of homosexual life which are still characterised by anxiety, uncertainty and, yes, bigotry, which is one good reason to welcome a new study of elderly gay and lesbian people in rural parts of England. And the principal investigator on the study, which is titled Gay and Pleasant Land, with a very big question mark after that word land, is Dr. Kip Jones, a reader in social science at Bournemouth University. He's now with me in the studio. We should say, shouldn't we, that this study is part of a very large national project into the elderly, into ageing.
Yes, sir, it's this New Dynamics of Ageing program of research, which has been going on for the past 3 years across the whole of the country. And our project at Bournemouth is part of a group of four universities in the southwest in Wales, looking particularly at ageing issues in rural England and Wales.
Now, why, you started off this investigation because you already felt that possibly these people were likely to be experiencing particular sorts of problems and anxieties and uncertainties. I mean, there is some work that's been done in this area already, is there?
It was work that had been done. In fact, there was a study done by one of my partners in crime on this study, Leanne Fenge, who had done an earlier study on older gays and lesbians. And in that study, they found that, number one, that the people that were attracted to the study generally were city dwellers. It was very difficult to get the involvement of people who were living in villages and rural areas. And the second thing that they found in that study that interested me was that people's coming out stories were a device that they used over their lifetime, often to cope with situations where, whether it was meeting new people or getting a new job. And the whole issue of, do you tell people or not that you're gay? If you're living in a very small village, do you reveal to the people who are your closest neighbors that you're gay or not? And that was very interesting to me too. So we decided to start from there.
You look into a whole variety of aspects of this. How do you find these people? Because, as I mean, you've already intimated, there must be very difficult to discover. How did you set about that?
We started up very early on assembling an advisory committee to work with us, which was people who had worked on the earlier project. We brought in some new people from various organizations, both rural organizations and gay and lesbian organizations, particularly in the southwest area and Wales, people from whose brief in their local council was to work with diversity.
So you're using a sort of snowballing effect, really.
Exactly. I
mean, somebody knows somebody, and they would mention someone, and then we networked
that way.
And what you did was to encourage them to tell their life stories. Is that right?
Yes, we did, and it's kind of a quirky way of working.
How much did you direct them? What do you say to them? Tell me the story of your life.
That's exactly the question that we use, and we don't interrupt them, and we allow them to go on as long as they would like and tell us in any order they would like to tell us about their lives, because then when we look back at that material, we find very interesting. For instance, if someone says something happened when they were 6, and then follows that up something that happened when they were 20. In a way, they're relating those two things without realizing.
I mean, to start off with, I suppose one of the questions you'd want to have an answer to in these life stories is, in a way, why the people chose to live in the country in the first place, because you might have thought that they would have known that probably an urban setting was likely to provide them with greater tolerance.
Yeah, I think I don't know if it's a myth or not, but that many gay people, including myself, feel that you go to the big city and that's where you will find your way and your people, and and your life, you know, and I think in many cases this is true. On the other hand, though, we were very interested in the fact of had people grown up in the country and stayed there, for instance. What we found out was that, in fact, most people move around over their lifetime from town to city, back to town, back to village. And there's no one certain direction out to the city.
You talk about them developing coping skills. Expand on that a bit more. What do you mean? They have to, what, to pass or to pretend that they're not gay or to work out ways of talking about being gay?
Well, it's very interesting. In the film that was the result of this, we told the story of one man who stayed in the village and throughout his lifetime in a way, in a closeted way, thinking that if he wasn't acting out in a gay, sort of gay way, that he would be fine and no one would know. And at the end, actually, of his life, people all knew, and they just didn't talk about it. And they felt if they didn't talk about it, it didn't exist, and then he could go on pretending. And this was actually quite damaging.
Now, of course, we've just got to emphasise the word elderly here, because the age of these people that you're talking to, their sexuality was certainly initially a cause of concern and anxiety, and has possibly gone on being a cause of anxiety. Let's just hear from one person. This is Brian. I mean, all the people in your research are anonymised, who was born in 1937 in a northwest seaside town, now lives in Dorset with his partner of 18 years. Brian described how he wasn't really comfortable with the very notion of being gay.
I was born in Lancashire, very much a North Country family, and very much a North Country person, in spite of all my travels. So I think that I'm not entirely comfortable about the gay side of me, but because I don't consider myself entirely gay. And I think I will take that sort of situation to the grave with me. My partner thinks I'm not at peace with myself.
So, I mean, these anxieties, which might be compounded by living in the country where, in fact, you need to hide your identity, but these are uncertainties which date really because of the age of the person, isn't it?
I think so. And we have to remember that many of the people that we interviewed and talking about, the men particularly, were teenagers when it was still illegal to be homosexual. And that they went through the period of the law changing in 1967. And just because the law changed doesn't mean that their early feelings about it being illegal and wrong and didn't stay with them for a very long time.
You, there's a chilling reference to here of how many of these people talk about knowledge that acquaintances of theirs had committed suicide.
I was very shocked by this, and this came up over and over and over again, and both in the focus groups and in the stories that people told us about their lives, about how a former partner committed suicide, and one fellow, his former partner committed suicide on his birthday, in fact, sort of to send a message that his life was...
Yeah, I mean, and you chronicle, I mean, sometimes almost an amusing way, if I can use that word, almost the ignorance which faced some of these people. Let's hear from June, again anonymised, born in 1931 in London, but who moved in the late 70s with her partner to run a small holding in the West Country.
My most rural experience was at a small holding in a tiny hamlet in Cornwall. Cornwall, they'd never heard of gay people, you know, not the locals. And I remember my next-door neighbour came up to us the day I moved in. Well, the day my friend and I moved in, bought this derelict farm to tart it up, and he took one look at us and fainted dead away. He just fainted dead away and removed his cow from our field.
I mean, it is difficult not to laugh at that sort of degree, but I mean, it plays it in as an instance of some of the things that these people had to deal with. Just to finish off, I know you're using this material, aren't you, to make a film, or you've made the film.
Yes.
And the idea is to show the film. Tell me what the idea is.
Yes, we just premiered the film in Bournemouth, and it was directed by Josh Abernathy, who's directed several other short films about very deep social topics, including dementia. The film itself will be shown in the countryside. We're hoping to take it around in a mobile cinema, if we get the funding for that, and go into small villages, show the film, and carry on discussions with the
Excellent.
Local.
Kip Jones, thank you very much for talking
thank
to
you.
Me.